This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. And the last question, if I'm not mistaken, before we ran out of time in part one, had to do with the role that DHA might play in enhancing fertility.
Yes.
And so DHA, it turns out, do you know that DHA is the most common steroid hormone in the body? It's actually more common than estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and all others combined. So it is, and it's actually the only hormone that you can get over the counter. I think the FDA and the powers that be are a little dismayed that people can buy hormones over the counter, and they may want to, you know, in the future, curtail our access to those. And I do agree that when you take DHA, it probably should be under a doctor's supervision, because there's some situations where you can get into trouble. I'm really not that happy with the idea of an 11-year-old who wants to get pumped up with muscles, or maybe thinks that, you know, he doesn't have enough peach fuzz on his cheeks, doesn't look masculine enough, you know, going to a health food store and getting a big jar of DHA and trying to improve on his, you know, puberty. That's a possibility. There's also, you know, muscle heads who may take massive amounts of it, which may not be good.
Right,
And there's also people who might take it for optimization, well-meaning, but they don't. They need to get checked out by a doctor to see if they have a higher risk for breast cancer or prostate cancer.
Yes.
Those should not be taken if you have active prostate cancer or breast cancer, although just as with testosterone, there's not a lot of evidence that DHA causes breast cancer or prostate cancer, but it's a hormone.
Yeah.
It's a hormone.
And it's the substrate hormone. It's like almost the parent hormone where most of the other hormones are made.
Right. So it can go to estrogen. It can go to testosterone. Mm-hmm. But it varies from individual to individual. And so so here's the deal. It actually, studies do show, and I think you looked this up too, that taking DHA during a time of infertility can somewhat increase your chances of getting pregnant. It is not something that's used by conventional fertility experts. I've noticed that they don't recommend DHEA. But the research is there, and we can sometimes recommend this to couples who are desirous of conceiving and having obstacles to conception.
And how it's said to work is by taking DHEA, it can increase the androgen in the body, which can make the eggs more viable or
something. It's not clear.
Better.
However, I do have a concern that you probably shouldn't be taking DHEA during pregnancy.
Yeah.
Because it might have a gender bending effect on the developing fetus. So we want the fetus to develop naturally without the influence of extra testosterone or DHEA or estrogen, because
it's like taking HRT during your pregnancy.
It's sort of when the sex organs develop, and even parts of the brain that may be associated with sexual orientation develop. And so we may not want to mess with that during pregnancy. I have encountered some patients who have had kids while taking DHA. I didn't suggest it, but they were taking it, and the kids seem fine. But, you know, you have to follow the kids for 20 years to make sure they're fine.
You do like higher amounts of DHA in individuals with autoimmune disease, right?
Inflammatory disorders, autoimmunity, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease. It has an intrinsic anti-inflammatory effect. And it has also an anabolic effect, so that it helps prevent muscle loss with aging. And I personally take DHA. I believe that DHA is one of the substances that's considered a doping substance that's banned by the World Anti-Doping Association. So if you're contemplating doing any kind of professional athleticism where you're going to get tested, don't take DHA.
I have actually a couple of elite athlete, clients who cannot take that. It's on the list.
Yes.
There's literally a list that they look at to make, Can't take that one. Okay, right. Off it goes.
Well, you know, the Chiripova stricken off, banned from sport for 2 years because she was taking meldonium, which is this performance enhancing thing that the Russian and Eastern European athletes were taking. And it's to me, it doesn't make sense. I'm not even sure that it really is performance enhancing, but it's an example where they switch the goalpost on her, because before it wasn't banned, but then it became banned. She should have known better than to take it. But the Russians and some of the Eastern Europeans, they take everything under the sun. This is not to say that we don't have our own homegrown problem with Lance Armstrong.
Right.
But
Didn't the Russians irradiate their athletes for the Olympics in the 1940s or something?
One of the things they actually did is they actually gave them UV light.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
that was thought to be, you know, enhancing athletic performance, but perhaps by raising vitamin D levels, which may be associated with better athletic performance. The Chicago Blackhawks, who won the Stanley Cup a few years back, part of their training regimen was to give high-dose vitamin D to the hockey players.
Now, vitamin D is a hormone.
Oh, yeah. It's a steroid hormone, too.
Yeah,
right.
So I wonder if that would be...
It's actually a pro-hormone.
It's a pro-hormone.
Right.
I wonder if that would be on a list for...
No,
great,
no.
Great. Elaine, thank you very much for your question. All right. We've got a question here from Mike. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, will hyperbaric oxygen therapy inhibit cancer from spreading or inhibit cancer growth altogether? Just curious, since I've read so many articles that talk about cancer metabolism and the Warburg hypothesis and so forth, that that cancer won't grow in an oxygen-rich
We've talked a lot
environment.
About hyperbaric oxygen because we now have a sponsor, not because I'm interested in it before, but then they became a sponsor because they know I'm a big advocate of hyperbaric oxygen therapy. We've had some really interesting guests, Dr. D'Agostini and Dr. Seyfried, Thomas Seyfried.
Yes.
Who are really interested in using hyperbaric oxygen in conjunction with a ketogenic diet to, as an adjunct to cancer therapy. I think nobody is saying that hyperbaric oxygen is a be-all and end-all of cancer treatment in any way, shape, or form. But number one, it reduces damage after radiation because radiation has a damaging effect, so it actually helps to protect the body. But at the same time, it enhances the efficacy of radiation because we know that radiation works as a pro-oxidant, and in the presence of really a high intensity oxygen, it is more effective. So tissue that is ischemic is harder for radiation to get to. You know, deep in center of a cancer, there may not be that much good blood supply, so it's harder to kill the cancer with whatever agent you're using. So getting a lot of oxygen in there is going to help.
Right.
Is it going to, in and of itself, cure the cancer? I definitely can't say that it will, but it is a great adjunct to cancer treatment. And, you know, through a variety of mechanisms.
Right. Mike, thank you for your question. All right. We've got an email from Steve. Hello, I listen to Dr. Hoffman regularly, and he mentioned L-methylfolate. Two questions. How effective is this for the MTHFR polymorphism to help methylation, and how does it compare to Folipro? I can answer that second question quickly. Folipro is the same thing, Steve. So how effective is this for the MTHFR polymorphism?
Well, then we have to get into what is the MTHFR polymorphism. And what that is there are four, there are two basic, there's three basic ways that you can have this gene, okay?
Yeah.
And genes come in pairs, so either you get a single hit or you get a double hit. So you can have two normals and you're normal. You can have one C6-7 variant or two simultaneous 677 variants. You can have a one 1298 and a normal, or you can have two 1298s, which is double trouble, or you can have a mixed heterozygote situation.
Right.
Heterozygote means one of each. 677-1298.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an area of exploding research because
yes.
methylation is one of the ways that genes turn on and turn off DNA expression.
Mm-hmm.
So the DNA is sitting there, and you can modify the DNA by the presence or absence of methylating agents,
yes.
of which folate, not folic acid, but folate,
mm-hmm.
is the most important, but by no means the only one.
Mm-hmm.
So this thing you could talk about in courses, very complicated. We don't even know some of the answers, but sometimes people who have double hits of this have high homocysteine, which
mm-hmm.
we know is a risk factor for dementia. We know that it is associated with certain psychiatric problems. It's associated with problems with allergy, intolerance, detoxification,
mm-hmm.
autism. There's a higher incidence of this
yeah.
in autism. And on it goes because it's ubiquitous. And it could be and the paradox of methylation is that it could be both a cancer, put a brake on cancer, but it can also, once a cancer is established, be a cancer promoter.
Yeah.
So, is this, and the other thing that is of interest is that there are certain people who appear to need more methylating agents. Let's go over the methylating agents. They're folate, B12, and B6.
Yes.
But particularly methyl B12 is the most bioavailable, and then
mm-hmm.
there's B6. You can take P5P. But also riboflavin plays a bit of a role in this, and trimethylglycine
yes.
or betaine, the same
mm-hmm.
thing, not betaine hydrochloride, but
mm-hmm.
betaine, which is TMG or trimethylglycine, they play a role. And there are other things that may influence methylation, like N-acetylcysteine, NAC.
SAMe.
SAMe can be part of the methylation
mm-hmm.
problem. But as I was about to say, is sometimes you give that to a person who seems to need it, and I don't have that much experience working with the autistic kids because I don't work with kids that much anymore. But it has been found that if you give too much methylation to some kids with another mutation at another site, the COMT site,
yeah.
they go off the wall. They get
right.
hyper-revved. So it's a very complex dance, an interplay of the genes and gene expression.
And, you know, not just in autism, but I think those who have one or two of the MTHFR
mm-hmm.
SNPs and they take, say, L-methylfolate or MethylGuard
mm-hmm.
or something like that, and if they also have COMT, it's possible that they can have a little bit of an adverse reaction like anxiety
right.
or something like that.
Okay,
and it doesn't necessarily happen immediately, but after a certain threshold of dosing, because many people start taking L-methylfolate and they feel fine, but then they're not fine a month later.
Right. And I actually first came across this in a woman who, we still see her now, she's in her 80s,
uh-huh.
and I began treating her it's got to be 25, 30 years ago, and she came in sort of dragging, and I gave her a shot of mixed B vitamins in
uh-huh.
in the rear end. You know, she just got the proverbial shot in the butt. And she just swore by it, and she has been coming faithfully every couple of weeks for 25-plus years, and she's reliant on it. And I just said, well, I don't know, it works for you. I'm not sure why. And, you know, we measure levels. The levels are not so low with her, but it just gives her a boost.
Yeah.
We recently, with the knowledge about this condition, we tested her, and we found that she had this defect. And she knows that if she goes longer than a couple of weeks without a mixed B vitamin shot, and I've given her oral, and oral doesn't work as well.
Interesting.
But I'll mention that I'm sitting here at my desk in the office, and I have a sample of something called Deplin. It's L-methylfolate, and it is a medical food that's available by prescription
mm-hmm.
that is pitched to psychiatrists as kind of hamburger helper for SSRI medication and SNRI medication. So if you're on if you're on Prozac, Zoloft,
Paxil, Effexor,
Celexa, and Lexapro,
mm-hmm.
very popular now. Lexapro, SNRI, Cymbalta, yeah, to a certain extent. There may be a complementary effect
mm-hmm.
of taking methyl donors, especially folate. So what this is, and this is medically approved, it is, it's L-methylfolate. Okay. However, it's from a regular drug lab, so it's mixed in with microcrystalline cellulose. That's not so bad. Algae powder. That's not so bad. Sodium caseinate, hyaluronic sunflower oil, tricalcium phosphate, tetrasodium diphosphate, natural flavors, and yellow number 6, FD&C number 40, red.
Oh, you had me at phosphates.
Right.
Actually.
And in shellac.
Oh, my.
And it contains milk and soy. So why they have it with all that stuff, it's because the conventional drug company got a hold of this idea, and they're making it in a regular pill form like every other drug they make,
uh-huh.
in like a shiny, you know, beautiful red pill or orange uh-huh. pill. You don't need all that stuff with your folate.
No.
So we prescribe that in a cleaner form to patients
yes.
who are on antidepressants or need it
mm-hmm.
for mood.
Mm-hmm. And eat your salads, eat your greens, eat your orange and red vegetables too. There is folate in there. And
folate
is usable.
Foliage.
As foliage. In foliage, exactly.
Right. And that's the real deal folate.
That is the real deal. Absolutely.
Right.
So.
Okay. We have time for another question or two.
We have, let's see, this is from Michael. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, is there a nutritional protocol or the use of key supplements to help get rid of an opiate addiction without experiencing a great amount of discomfort while being off of it? Is there a particular supplement or exercise regimen, nutritional protocol to minimize the physical withdrawal effects of getting off these painkillers? Opiate addiction is huge.
Yes, and there's actually some holistic practitioners who specialize in nutritional support for addiction.
Yeah.
I don't. I've worked with a few people who have addiction issues.
Hmm.
And I will tell you that it's, you still will go through the pangs of withdrawal, but you can make it easier when you're on a balanced diet.
Yes.
When your blood sugar is stable.
High in protein and fat. Yes.
Yeah. And because there's a real connection between the sugar craving part of the brain and the addictive brain.
Yeah.
So in addition, it's been shown that certain nutrients are needed and helpful in these patients, because many patients are in crappy diets when they're addicted.
Totally.
And so giving them a good complement of B vitamins is important for mood.
Fish
we
oil.
Can certainly give them tryptophan or tyrosine, amino mm-hmm. acids for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
There's some evidence that with cocaine addiction, specifically, there's actually some studies that show that N-acetylcysteine, or NAC, is helpful in support of withdrawal from cocaine addiction.
Wow.
So there is a basis for believing that nutritional support can play a role
mm-hmm.
in this. And there is
definitely some magnesium, some fish oil.
Definitely magnesium, yeah.
A good, well-rounded multi for starters. And the elimination of other addictive foods that hit the opioid circuitry, which the person undergoing withdrawal may actually begin to crave. I'm thinking of gluten and casein off the top of my head, besides sugar.
A good place to start is with Dr. Joan Matthews Larson, and it's Matthews-Larson. And she's really a pioneer in the field of nutritional support for addiction, because she lost her son many years ago, decades ago. And she developed a 12-step treatment program that's based on conventional principles, but also with nutritional support. And she is in Minnesota, which happens to be sort of a mecca for recovery. I think there's some few places in the country, there are places where there are a lot of recovery centers. I don't know. For some reason, Malibu is a place where there's, like Southern California is a place with a lot of rehab facilities mm-hmm. for that. But she's written a book called 7 Weeks to Sobriety and Depression Free Naturally. And you get the book, because it kind of outlines what she recommends in terms of support for addiction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's also Julia Ross.
Yeah.
Who's a psychologist. She's on the West Coast. I don't remember off the top of my head where in California she is, but she wrote a very, very excellent book years ago called The Mood Cure. And I would recommend it to anybody who is undergoing this type of crisis.
Right.
So, yeah. Michael, thank you very, very much for your question.
Yeah, the what they do is they, this is called orthomolecular medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And in orthomolecular medicine, they use nutrients to substitute for the effects of the opiates on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who are substance abusers have hungry brains. Their brains really require a higher degree of activation with neurotransmitters.
Looking for dopamine.
Yeah,
at least.
And so we can sometimes get in there and support that. Now, there's going to be a letdown, no question.
Yeah.
But it may mitigate the process, make cravings less, and minimize the discomfort if you're on a really sound nutritional program. I think that's well recognized by almost every current addiction treatment center, whether or not they prescribe massive doses of vitamins.
Right.
They believe in a very healthy diet regimen to support that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's well known that, you know, heroin addicts just eat really terrible diets, partly because
they're constipated,
number one, but also they have enormous cravings for sugar. It accompanies the addiction.
I was listening to a report on NPR this morning where this was actually taking place in Vancouver, where a lot of heroin is masquerading. Actually, fentanyl is masquerading as heroin, being sold as heroin on the street. And what they're finding is it's a whole lot of fentanyl.
Right. It's much more powerful than heroin.
So, anyway.
Yeah, so it's not enough to kick. It's also they want to promote abstinence and a healthy lifestyle, which will be a bulwark against relapse.
Yeah.
So that I think it's absolutely essential. Usually we don't like to detox people here who are in the throes of detox, but we like, once they've detoxed, to give them guidance about how to lead a really healthy, balanced lifestyle so that they have less need for external substances to regulate their moods.
Because they're looking for that fix to feed their neurotransmitters, and you could feed that with nutrition a whole lot better and replenish all of that and feel better.
Avoid the highs and lows that blood sugar problems cause and, you know, all that stuff. So that does play a role. So Joan Matthews Larson is a good starting point for investigating this. I remember interviewing her many years ago on before I even had Intelligent Medicine program. It was called Health Talk, and she is a real pioneer in this field.
All right.
Okay, well, that's all the time that we have for today's edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Remember, these podcasts are free. We're very happy to provide them to you, but please support our efforts in this regard by patronizing the Hoffman Center store. We've got great supplements there. Things that we mentioned in this podcast are available via HoffmanCenter.com or drhoffman.com. Check out our vast selection of sometimes hard-to-obtain nutritional supplements at reasonable prices and enhance your health thereby in two ways. You'll get great supplements, and you'll also have an ongoing program of free podcasts courtesy of yours truly and Layla.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.